It's time for insight and conversations about Rider University athletics with the Bronx student athletes, coaches, and administrators making news in the community, the classroom, and in competition. This is the Go Bronx Podcast. The Go Bronx Podcast is a joint production of Rider University Athletics and the Department of Communication and Journalism's Sports Media Program. Now here's your host, AJ Moore.
Hello and welcome to the Go Bronx Podcast. I'm your host, AJ Moore. Today we are talking about Rider University Athletics with head athletic trainer, Tim Langle. Tim, welcome to the Go Bronx Podcast.
Thank you, AJ.
So Tim, you're the head athletic trainer here at Rider University. What are your primary duties, responsibilities working within the athletic department?
Well, athletic trainers are allied healthcare professionals that are tasked with prevention, recognition, treatment and rehabilitation of injuries. So I try and tell people when they ask what I do, we basically run a full-on medical, orthopedic, and rehab clinic here for the student-athletes on campus. So any injury that they sustain while competing in athletics or sometimes outside of athletics, we will work with them to get them back to the field as quickly and safely as possible.
Mm-hmm. So you've been here for about 15 years now, and the university has really the last few years focused on athletics. They're investing in coaches, recruiting, all the athletic aspects. How do you see a difference now in the training end of a school that really is starting to look at athletics as an important part?
I actually see that it's put more strain on my staff. Mm-hmm. Because we haven't expanded at all despite expansion in athletics. And don't get me wrong, I love the fact that athletics is becoming more of a focus. But, you know, we struggle a little bit with the volume that we deal with in the athletic training room. But I have seen an emphasis on athletics, as the president puts it, being the front porch of the university. You know, the things with the ESPN truck and the publicity that we're getting in athletics is all great stuff. From my perspective, the more athletes, the more work, you know, the harder it is to take care of them.
So do you see an increase in injuries post-game, pre-game, post-practice, pre-practice? With so much athletics going on, have you seen an increase in volume?
We've definitely seen an increase in volume simply because we have 60-plus athletes compared to 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But as far as the emphasis being on athletics, the athletes compete hard just as much before as they do now. So I don't see it as an extension of them competing harder necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's more of them.
So the idea of athletic training and physical training, the student athletes who are coming to campus are really focusing on that at younger ages. They're working on muscle development, skill development very early. There's definitely that push in youth sports to get bigger, faster, stronger. Do you see any injuries different when they get to the college level that they're working so hard in the youth level?
We do, and having you know, teenage sons, I see it myself. 10 or 15 years ago, the student athletes would come to Rider and they had never lifted before. Mm-hmm. There were never such programs in their high school. Now it's commonplace. They lift several days a week across sports. I think that's fantastic. Where we start to see the issues arising is when they are specifying their sport too early and they're playing year round. Mm-hmm. So back in the day, my day, you were a three sport athlete, and each of those sports had different demands from a muscular perspective and a stress perspective. So you competed in the one for 3 months and then you moved on to the other, and certain parts of your body got a chance to rest. That's not the case anymore because the students are being asked to choose a sport when they're 10, 11, 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And play that all year long. And, you know, you hear these days college coaches say, I want three sport athletes, and high school coaches say they want three sport athletes. But unfortunately, they just don't really make it possible to mm-hmm. be a three-sport athlete when the baseball coach is telling you you need to play baseball in the summer, you need to play baseball in the fall. How can you play football in the fall if you're being required to play baseball mm-hmm. as well? Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. So as much as people say they want that, they also want you to be the best you can at the sport that they're coaching and put an emphasis on that.
So we'll talk about concussions in a couple minutes, but looking at this focus with younger kids specifying a particular sport and possibly injuring themselves, wearing out, doing that kind of physical demand, what type of injuries do you see kids coming into college now that you say, well, maybe that had to do with all the particular work they did in high school that they didn't do 10, 15 years ago?
Without a doubt, overuse injuries, stress fractures, stress reactions, more and more of them. They used to be isolated to distance running sports or endurance sports. Now we have student athletes coming in all different sports that have already experienced some kind of stress reaction in their career just because, you know, the increased demands and the increased volume of their training. Also, along with that, specific to baseball, we see a lot more of our student athletes coming in needing what's referred to as Tommy John surgery or reconstruction of the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow because of the excessive throwing that they're being asked to do. Now, the sport has done some great things in trying to curtail that with pitch counts and the number of days that you're allowed to pitch. But kids are playing in travel baseball, they're playing rec baseball, they're playing high school baseball, they're playing over the summer for a different team, they're playing in the fall for another team, and all those coaches can't necessarily coordinate and really effectively limit how much those mm-hmm. student athletes are pitching in order to prevent these kind of injuries. So it's just, again, it's just the sheer volume of being a year-round one-sport athlete.
So I'm asking you to paint with a very broad brush. But do more kids come into college now with pre-existing injuries? Are you seeing more kids, the first time you see them, they already have a litany of injuries they're trying to overcome?
Without a doubt. We see, it runs the gamut of the injuries that we see with them, but they are coming in with a much longer medical history, a lot more surgical cases coming to us, a lot more student athletes that have had previous surgeries that they're still recovering from. They're still not fully rehabbed through and ready to get back out on the field or the court or whatever. But it is definitely a much higher volume than we've seen in the past.
So then those student athletes have to do whatever they have to do for their sport. They're practicing, they're playing, they're doing all that work, and there's rehab time as well.
Correct. One of their obligations as a student athlete, a collegiate student athlete, is if you're injured or you're not 100%, that you're also spending the time that you need to in order to get yourself better and back to 100%. And that can add up. Mm-hmm. We see student athletes two or three times a day in the athletic training room, 6 or 7 days a week, depending on what point they are in their season. And that definitely can add a lot of time to the already large commitment that they're, subjecting themselves to as a collegiate student athlete. Mm-hmm.
So let's shift to concussions, Tim, because that's such a popular topic these days. And just going back to the whole idea of a concussion and working in the professional capacity that you do, we talk about concussions all the time now. Do you remember at a time where when you were working or in college where you heard more and more talk about concussions? You were there and you can remember when the tide started to change and now concussions became more a central topic of conversation.
Without a doubt. I mean, I thought you were going to ask me the opposite. When I remember hearing, I just rung my bell. I got mm-hmm. my bell rung,
right.
Or, I got a ding. I remember all that. I guess probably the event that started to change the awareness was probably the NCAA class action lawsuit. Mm-hmm. and how that affected how the NCAA deals with concussions. Along the same, about the same time, you had the NFL class action settlement. So the NCAA was then pushing schools to handle concussions differently. Most schools were already handling them, you know, very well, but there were some that, that weren't. But it really started to change the attitude of coaches and parents and athletes, not necessarily the medical professionals who were dealing with them, but we started to see a lot more compliance from the student athletes in reporting concussions, a lot more acceptance amongst the coaches, and a lot more concern among the parents in order to make sure that those concussions were taken care of. Now, obviously, you still see in the news today some pretty egregious cases of ignorance towards concussions and how a coach treated a student athlete and sent them back out on the field without being evaluated by a medical professional. But you're seeing those far, far less than we used to.
So think about of our age when we were younger and you everybody had a coach say to you, well, you got your bell rung. And that was a very common expression. So looking back at it now, 20, 30, 40 years later, how wrong were those coaches to say, or how wrong were parents to say, well, you just got your bell rung? Was it ignorance? Was it a lack of understanding the long term? Or why was there this general, you got your bell rung, was the mentality?
I think 20, 30 years ago, it was simple ignorance. I mean, there just wasn't the field of research that there is right now. But the problem is that even with all that research, we're still pretty much in the dark about the long-term effects of concussions. The kind of the prevailing theory now is if you sustain a concussion and you fully recover from that concussion before you go back out on the field, that you can resolve from that concussion without some of the issues that we see in the NFL and the NHL with post-concussion syndrome and these long-term effects to their mental health and physical health. But that's just the prevailing theory of this day. We won't probably know for another 20 or 25 years whether that's actually the case. So, you know, the thought process is with the NFL players and in NHL players was that they were going back so quickly and they were not only getting additional concussive level hits, but these constant subconcussive hits. And that's why you see this trend of football programs and football conferences. The Ivy League is a good example. Limiting the amount of contact per week. The NFL, I think, only hits once or twice full contact a week. Some teams do it even less, you know, just to minimize the risk. I think the Ivy League has even instituted a new program where they're using robot tackling dummies. So you're not hitting the tackler is hitting the dummy at full speed as opposed to the tackler hitting another teammate at full speed, which at that point you have two risks of concussion as opposed to potentially just one. So
the general person is going to say, well, I know a concussion is you hit your head hard. It's a head injury. Using layman's terms, how do you explain what a concussion is?
Using layman's terms, well, first of all, it doesn't necessarily have to be sustained from a hit to the head. It can be a fall to the ground where your head is jarred quickly back and forth. And the brain, it moves around in fluid within your skull. And if it's moved quickly enough one way or the other with enough force, it actually slams up into the side of the skull. That causes injury without going into the, you know, the nitty-gritty details of the neuroscience. But it causes an injury depending on where in the brain the contact is or the impact is sustained that affects those parts of the brain. So you can see effects in many different areas. They can manifest themselves cognitively. They can be in memory. They can be emotional. They can be vestibular ocular, meaning that you just can't gain your balance because the communication between the eyes and the ears and the brain isn't being done efficiently. So, you know, for a layperson, if I was telling them, if I was having this discussion with them, if you have a hit to the head and you have any kind of symptoms, you likely have a mild concussion.
Mm-hmm.
The reality in this day is it's not so hard diagnosing the concussion because we're past that, oh, you just got your bell rung. As long as you feel all right in 15 or 20 minutes, you don't have to do anything about it. That's not the case anymore. It's more about when are they safe to go back. Mm-hmm. And that's where, some pretty extensive concussion protocols are put in place so we can determine when the student athlete is safe to go back. They've gone through neuropsychological testing, exertion testing, balance testing, vestibular ocular testing. They have to pass all that before they're capable of going back out mm-hmm. on the field.
So in your situation or the other trainers at Rider, if a wrestler gets hit down hard on the mat, a basketball player goes up for the rebound, collides, hits the floor, soccer player, have a header, all these ideas where you can or situations where you can hurt yourself, if there's a suspicion of a concussion, what's the first thing you or the trainers do with that student athlete?
Obviously remove them from activity. Evaluate them. To determine whether they have sustained a concussion. You can take a blow to the head or a fall on the ground and not sustain a concussion. So it's not every time someone takes a bump to the head that they're automatically mm-hmm. out and they go into this return to play protocol that could take, you know, up to 7 to 10 days. So if we do witness something or they do report to us that they were hit in the head, then we would do a neurological workup in order to assess whether they have a concussion. If they're able to pass that assessment, we can then return them to play and deem that they did not sustain a concussion. If they are exhibiting any kind of symptoms or they fail any parts of our neurological examination, then they're deemed as having a concussion, and they go into the return to play protocol mm-hmm. at that point in time.
So talk about the issues being a trainer. If a player breaks his arm or a player, she tears her ACL, we know that. We see that immediately. You can give it that immediate diagnosis. How do you deal with a student athlete who gets hit in the head and you say, well, we think you have a concussion, and he or she says, no, I'm all right, I can go out and play, but you obviously have protocols that you must follow?
Yes. It can be very difficult, especially if the student athlete, well, first of all, if they're not being honest about their symptoms, it makes it extremely difficult to ascertain whether they have a concussion or not. If they're just simply saying, I'm fine, and they're answering no to all of our questions in regard to symptoms, it's very difficult. We've tried to do a better job of reaching the student athletes and getting them to understand that they're only doing their own health a disservice by not being honest with the medical staff.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be very difficult from the standpoint, just as you said, that you cannot see a concussion. So a lot of the pressure on the student athlete comes from potentially teammates, parents, coaches, because even with all the education in recent years, you can't see it. So it's very difficult for a coach sometimes to grasp why a student athlete's out. And what you get a lot of times is when the coach asks the student athlete how they're feeling, they're like, oh, I'm fine, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they come and they take our graded symptomology tests, they report significant symptoms. And then the coach comes in and says, why is he still out? He's telling me he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, coach, well, this is what he just told me an hour ago. He reported 25 points worth of symptoms on this questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fine. So it's kind of bridging the gap between, the great education that has gone on and just making sure that the competitive nature of the student athletes and the coaches and even the parents doesn't get the better of mm-hmm. them, and that allows them to try and get by with some symptoms, try and be tough for their team, try and be tough for their coach and go back out there when they're not fully 100%.
If you could put yourself in the position of being a trainer for a professional franchise, if it's major league, minor league, how is that different than working at a university where there's different factors? A lot of the students are minors. A lot of them are away from home, and this is the first time away from home. Obviously, they're here first and foremost for academics. So you have to deal with a lot of different factors with student athletes than if they were professional athletes. What's the biggest difference for you dealing with those factors?
Well, I mean, we also have to be concerned with, obviously, their education. So we also have a return to learn policy in order to make sure that they're ready to go back to class and that they're functioning in class and they're doing well. We have had some student athletes in the past that have had continued issues with going back to class and functioning cognitively and looking at computer screens, being able to read the amount of work, the amount of pages that they're supposed to at night to keep up with their classes. And it can create significant problems for them. Difference to me would be from a college setting like we are here at a mid-major is that I think everybody kind of understands that it's education first and the student athlete's health and safety comes first. My medical staff makes autonomous medical decisions without pressure from coaches, and I think that's the way it should be everywhere. Some of the higher level college and into the professionals, you're dealing with pressure. It's a business, whether it's college or it's professional, it's a business. There's no doubt about that. You have pressure put on you by the coaches, and sometimes the coach decides whether or not you keep your job, depending on how the university is set up. So I'm very comfortable here at this level, at this university, with how we treat our student athletes and how we make our medical decisions. I would be less comfortable if I were at a larger BCS football school or in the professional ranks when pulling the star athlete as to whether I was going to be able to keep my job.
So football, obviously there's a connection, if it's real or just inferred, this connection between football and concussions. How might your job be different if you were at a football institution?
Well, without doubt, we would be dealing with more concussions than we do now. But we do see a good number of concussions just because we don't have a collision sport here like ice hockey, football, or men's lacrosse doesn't mean that the concussions don't occur. We see quite a few in our soccer programs, the wrestling programs, basketball, you know, and you see them even in track and field, as crazy as that sounds. Sometimes swimming, sometimes the training that they do puts them in a situation where they can have contact to their head as well. So we would definitely be seeing more if we had a football program. I don't think we would be handling it from a medical perspective any differently. Again, the commitment to the student athletes here is that their health and safety is first. And if you have that commitment up front, it doesn't matter the sports that you have, you're going to handle each concussion. Not the same, because every concussion is different, but you're going to handle them with the same protocol, making the decision with the focus being on the health and safety of the student athlete.
So here we are, 2020, talking about athletic training, and concussions are a big part of that conversation. Another big change, I would say, in just the general outlook of college athletics or pro athletics as well, is the idea now of athletes or student athletes and mental health. That seems to be getting another round of focus as well as concussions. So how has that changed? That, to go back to that expression, the coach, well, you got your bell rung, right? That was an older mentality. The older mentality was mental health, you're fine, we don't think about it, we don't talk about it. That's changed along with concussions. So how is the job different for you now when there is a focus on athletes and mental health?
As the focus on mental health has grown and we see a big difference in the athletic training room with the number of student athletes that are coming in that have diagnosed mental health issues that are on psychotropic medications, in conjunction with concussions and how you treat them, you really need to focus on that, and you need to delve deep into their history to make sure that there aren't any underlying mental health issues, there aren't any potential medication issues that might exacerbate the length that a concussion is going to remain symptomatic. And the fact that depending on the realm in which the concussion presents itself, if someone already has some underlying mental health issues and it's presenting as a more of a an emotional spectrum concussion, you need to be that more vigilant on that person that the dysfunction that's going on in the brain is not worsening symptoms of depression and anxiety that may cause them to do something like hurt themselves, which is obviously what we need to prevent.
Sure. So I would imagine for you, the difficult part is, as you said, some athletes might not be open with you about possible concussion issues. There might be that hesitation to talk about mental health as well with a trainer.
I would agree with that. I think the stigma on mental health is getting less and less. The nice thing about being an athletic trainer at this level is that we have a relationship with our student athletes that is different than with the coaches, per se. We're with them every day. We're with them at just about every practice. We create relationships with them that not all medical professionals are able to create with these student athletes. So I feel that they're more open with us about these kinds of issues regards to mental health. But you're also, you know them so well that then when they're not themselves, you can recognize it. Mm-hmm. And intervene on their behalf, even if they're not telling you. If you notice something and you can simply just inquire with them, hey, you don't look right, you don't seem like yourself. A lot of that stuff will come out pretty quickly once you ask those questions.
Mm-hmm. And just wrapping it up, Tim, here we are talking about Athletics Rider in February. Is this the busiest time of year for you, where you have men's and women's basketball ending up, wrestling finishing, and now here come the spring sports? Is this your busy time?
It is definitely the second busiest time of the year. The first busiest is when all the winter sports start and all the fall sports are still in their conference tournaments. Mm-hmm. That's the worst, just because the fall has more teams than the spring. The spring being baseball, softball, and track and field. But again, everybody pretty much goes all year long. So even the teams that are not in season or a non-traditional season right now are training, lifting. So it's kind of hard to tell when the busy point of the mm-hmm. year is, but this is definitely one of them. Going into conferences for men's and women's basketball, baseball, softball are already starting their heavy travel schedules for the spring on their southern swings to get to some warm weather. It's definitely a daunting time of the year for us.
Well, great. Tim, I'd like to thank you for being our guest this week on the Go Bronx podcast. Please join us next week when we continue our look into Rider athletics.
Thanks for supporting Rider University Athletics and listening to the Go Bronx podcast. For more information on Rider University Athletics, please go to GoBronx.com. And to purchase tickets for live Bronx action, go to GoBronxTix.com. To learn what Rider University's sports media program has to offer, please contact Dr. A.J. Moore at amoore@rider.edu.